Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast, episode 624. I'm joined by Peter.
Hello.
Steve.
Good weekend to you.
Good weekend to you, Stephen.
Well-known phrase.
Yeah. All right. So listen, I've got a couple of lists of things I want to talk about. And normally we just come on here and shoot the breeze, man. What does that mean? I don't know. It's just air coming out of your mouth, is it? But how do you shoot it? Americans do come up with some cracking sayings that don't make any sense. But when you think about it, they do, you know? That's what I said, just sitting there shooting the breeze, you know what I'm saying? But anyway, so that's what we normally do. But I've got a list of at least three things I want to talk about this weekend, which may help. But first and foremost, let's get what's on your mind. Steve. That's about right. That's what's on Steve's mind.
That's it.
And Pete, have you got any questions, anything happened in the week that you think, wow, yes, someone's going to talk about this. This is a burning hot topic that everyone would like to hear about. Anything?
And alas.
Right, yes. So, on Friday, the final results out. The share price has been hammered and hammered. It's now sub 3 million market cap. And you've got to a certain extent, they can't win at the moment, you know? They've got a good board, right? But yet people are saying, well, they'll be very expensive, you know? So, okay, let's put a rubbish board in then and have them charge nothing, you know? So you've got a world-class board there of people and, the assets. They came out with their final results. And this is one of the one things I want to talk about is how much cash does the company have? Because I know certain blog has been saying they need to raise money, they're out of cash, burning cash, whatever. And so they released the final results. And the figure we saw, first and foremost, now you must understand, when a company releases its final results, that is final results for the year ended the 31st of April, like say, you know. So by the time they publish those and they get them out, then we've gone, you know, five months on the line. So yeah, so results the 30th of April. So it's now it's now the 28th of October. So to a certain extent, a lot of news is going to be happening, you know, from the official accountants putting that together and all that, and all people going through it and checking it until, you know, when it's released. So certain events may have happened in the meantime. So when you look at it, and if you scroll straight to the, say, for example, balance sheet or something, and you see cash in bank, total cash and equivalents, $290,000. You think, is that all they've got? And you realise, you know, you try and look at how much they're burning. They lost $4 million last year. But then sometimes you'll see on a statement at the top there, post-period highlights or events or something. And that's something they've put in later, you know, that has reflected that. I mean, sometimes it's not in there, which I should have done at the top, to be honest, because people have got to say, it's all they've got is a... But listen, in every bit of statement, it's broken down into sections, and you'll scroll down to financial review, for example, and they go through everything that's happened. And so they showed there that they also raised £3.355 million in May. Of course, May is after April, so that's after the actual accountancy date, cut-off date, after the year-end reporting date. So then what you do then is basically to work out how long that will last. This is what I do. It's a rough generalisation. This is also based on, you know, the past cash burn, for example. So you get that figure, 3.55 million, which they raised after the end of reports were out. And you add that to the cash they had on their balance sheet. So that's 290. So you get that, essentially, that's how much cash they got. Then you look at how much they've lost, or, you know, go to the cash flow statement, how much they've used in operating activities in the last 12 months. Divide that by 12, yeah? And so you've got basically a rough monthly cash burn. For Andlass is $389,000 there.
So that includes obviously the cost of having that nice expensive board of people running this company.
Yeah, so they'll also have share options.
Yes,
so that cash burn there will give you a thing. And so you think, right, how much? So they've got $4.6 million, I think, altogether now in cash. So you just divide that amount. So let's say rough figures. Let's say it's 4 million divided by 400,000 a month, you know, in cash burn. And so you can work out how long that lasts, and that will take analysts up to May, pretty much, you know, on that figure. So you're roughly, you know, it's only a rough figure, so you don't know what they're spending at the moment, but you're just going over a 12-month period, and in that period you see some chunky things happening because they've done some, you know, assets, they bought some assets, AIM listing, readmission, all that stuff. So, you know, it may be higher, maybe lower, but you say, so you err on the side of caution, say, let's say 10 months then, they've got, that's all they say. So that's how I work it out, you know? I mean,
the thing I don't get, though, is on an RNS like that, why don't they state all that rather than you have to kind of fag packet maths work it out?
You should always do fag packet maths, though, because
I don't smoke.
Beer mat maths or right. Back of envelope maths. You know, you should always try and do that because I mean, you know, there may be exceptional. Let me finish then.
Okay.
But because they'll always be, they can't say, because that's forward projection saying, oh, we will continue to burn this. They can't really say that because they don't know. But I mean, that's all you can do. All you can do at the moment, they may have a one-off, they may spend less, you never know. But so all you can do on previous guidance is go by that, you know? And that's for you to sort of work out. I know it's not easy. And the thing is, the trouble is, you know, the people that write this up have been doing these kind of things for years. And so to them, it's quite familiar. You know, to new investors, not. And it should be a bit more simple, maybe, saying, so this is how much cash we had at the end of, as of 30th of April. This is how much we raised, you know, since. And so we have this. And, you know, they can't say how much they're burning. But
maybe. Helps. No, I get the burning thing. But the actual cash balance as of today in the bank, we have this much money. But they don't
because,
say that.
Because these are final results for the year ended, which are the...
Why don't they then go, that was up till April, and the current position is this?
Yeah, they could do. I mean, I'll put it to Dave when I speak to him next, you know. RNS is not the best to read. That's why I like podcasts, you know, because people can talk on podcasts what they're about. And it is...
Any good ones?
Yeah, I do, actually. but, you know, as I was saying, I quite like that because they can talk about it and explain. And talking about that, you know what? And this brings us on to the next thing I want to talk about, management. Now, you know, if you look at any company, first and foremost, management. And at the moment, stocks I hold, I've got to say, I'm confident in the following companies. Talao Energy, right? Proven track record. Asia Met, proven track record. Tony Gilby, Tony Manini. And also, on Friday, I chatted to Dr. Steve Staley. Dr. Sensible Steve, yeah? That's what we're calling him.
Yeah.
Dr. Sensible Steve. Because Steve, he's all about risk and reward. And he wants to, you know, he's building here. And he's only got one asset at the moment. They've upped their share of that 25%. But I genuinely think, and he was talking to me, and you wouldn't
This is Upland.
Yeah, Upland Resources. UPL, ticker, yeah. And you wouldn't think he's excited, but he said to me off the bugger, I'm quite excited about what's happening, to be honest with you, off the end of the podcast. He said, I know I'm quite sort of held back. And even the guy who introduced Sasha, who introduced me to them, was the PR guy there. He said, Steve is very sensible, and he's quite a measured guy. And so that's quite good, though. When you invest in a company, you want that, don't you? You know, and companies he's previously been involved with, he's done the due diligence. And then the running of the company has been taken over by somebody else, some maverick, you know, which is then running off the rails. But he's set up companies with excellent assets. And that's what he's doing now. He's at the driving seat at Upland. Plus, he's got a chunky board there. You know, as chairman owns 30%, a very influential guy from Malaysia. Now, so the strategy they're doing, which is very sensible, they're getting quite safe cash-generative assets first. A couple of those, and then they're going for bigger plays, which are riskier, but have more potential upside, you know? But again, due diligence is the thing, he states all the time, and not taking too big a risk. And I really like him, and I'm adding him to the management, premier management folder that Tony Manini and Tony Gilby sit in. I'm adding now Dr. Stephen Sensible Staley in there. So I think, I honestly think, in a couple of years, I said in my blog this, I think they'll have three producing assets this time next year, and I think this could be a, you know, I don't know. It's a very fine line between research and ramp, you know, and I'm sitting on that line right now. But I'm just saying I'm very happy with my position at Uplands, and I trust Steve, to not Steve, we talked to on the podcast, you know. Even though I do trust Steve.
I wouldn't trust me, no.
No, I would trust you, Steve. I don't know if you would trust you running an oil and gas company.
or your stocks and shares.
Yeah, my stocks and shares again. But, you know, I would trust you in other matters. And here we are. So, so what else are we talking about this week? Anything else? Oh, Talao came up with the final results, which is nice. They got 3 odd million in the bank. And again, this is a weakness in price. There's a big seller in there, right? This is from an overhang, a sellout, and this is adds pressure to the price. But listen, you know, if you're not in there, this is an opportunity to get in there, because you know, again, Tony Gilby, he's not a ramper, he's quite a sensible guy, and he does believe, looking at what they have here now, in Botswana geologically, and just the social, you know, makeup of the country, the need, the desperate need, the chronic shortage of energy there, and the fact that they use diesel, which is phenomenally expensive and dirty fuel, and they have blackouts all the time, and the government has prioritised, you know, coal bed methane as the way forward here, and Talao are the most advanced company in that country doing this. You know, he says, based on all that, he says essentially, this has more potential than Sunshine Gas and Arrow Energy, which he was previously, you know, pioneer. He pioneered CBM in coal bed methane in Australia with a couple other guys, and it made them a fortune, you know. And yet, we're talking about 20 million market cap to billions selling for. And he sees more potential in Botswana. And I don't see he's saying this is a rampy kind of thing. Of course, he's enthusiastic about his own project, but he's just saying, you know, geologically it fits. You know, it's a stable government. It's you know, one of the longest stable governments in Africa. They genuinely need the energy there. They need to be cheaper. They're importing it, or they're using diesel, which doesn't work for them. So expensive. And he just sees more potential there. And I think, but, you know, on AIM, it's very short-term, isn't it? People just look at the short-term, you know, and they see a bit of a dip in the price stock, and they start to worry. And they hang on. You know, it's a long-term investment. Tuck it away. It doesn't matter if you're 10, you know, percent down or 15% down at the moment. It doesn't matter.
That was the thing with Anderlecht. I just sort of think the psychology of people selling. I mean, because everybody will be selling at a loss there because it's at an all-time low price, isn't it? So there's nobody that will be at the current price, speaking on Friday anyway. It's just like, that's quite nuts, isn't it? So whereas other times you see people selling, you go, well, some people might still be in profit from buying it, you know, years ago or whatever, and some people are just trimming their portfolio or whatever, but everybody selling Anderlecht at the moment is making a loss, and you go, wow, that's to me, that's a bit weird, because you just sort of go, well, we're in it now, aren't we? So
we do generally look at the stock prices too closely. I mean, listen, we do a podcast every week, I do one every day, and we monitor stock prices on a minute-by-minute basis almost, and that's not the way to look at it, you know? I mean, if you invest in a new business, you can expect your bank loan, and you can expect not to make money, you know, for a while.
Yep.
And that's the thing. And you've got to have a longer-term view. Like I said, it's the same kind of thing in Indonesia. They have a problem with power, you know. They're also prioritising, you know, working up new oil fields and trying to get power on. And less at the centre of that. So it'll take a while.
And their board is quality as well, isn't it?
So ignoring, you know, I mean, I genuinely think over the longer term, and you're talking maybe 2-3 years, you know, it may be a year, but I just genuinely think that they've got the right guys in the right place to do it. So
I just noticed someone made a sell on Anderlecht at £48.40, and it wasn't me. They're obviously cutting their losses there, £48.
They're like, right, I'm out.
I probably was.
£50.
Yeah. And do you know what? That person is probably the most vocal slagger off of Anderlecht ever. It's like, I know where I keep my money in there. I'm ripping that out there. And I'm nearly 13 quid in there. Cool.
There's quite a lot of people. There's a £16 buy here.
It's not just
me who does this.
There's lots of small buys. What's going on? That's very strange.
Yeah. But oddly, on the Friday morning, the sales, people start selling straight away. What are you doing, you maniacs?
Yeah,
I mean, these people just want to make a profit in a day, you know? Look at the long term. Look at the long term for a bit. And I that's what I think. I mean, you can't make a judgment on the financial results. There will be news coming out, you know? And I think, why sell on the down day? Sell on that day. Just wait. Bide your time. And I can't see him raising any money at this level anyway. So, it's ridiculous.
They sort of need to come out and if they need to do a placing, but that was one of my questions. Actually, that was a question I was going to ask. How do placings work? In like, who sets that price? Is it sort of a mixture of the broker and the board and their nomad and all that stuff, or what?
Yeah, but of course, it depends on the position the company's in. You know, I mean, if the company is a highly, you know, wanted to get a hot stock or something, then they can do it at no discount, even at a premium sometimes. You know, if they get approached by an institutional investor, for example, saying, you know, we've been looking at our company and we want to take some stock, then they could definitely, you know, do it at a premium and maybe offer as incentive some warrants, you know. So so people could essentially, you know, they can have stock at a higher level, but, you know, it's an option to get more stock at a higher level, but if the share price goes above that, they can still have it. So if, for example, if you say, right, we're going to, you know, invest £1 million at 1p, so we'll give you warrants then at, you know, at 2p. And so in the future, they believe in the company goes above that level, so that, you know, it could be at like 5p in the future, they can still exercise those warrants at 2p, and straight away they're in the money, you know. So it's an incentive. So yeah, but it depends. If a company's up against the wall and they've got no one to, you know, to loan money to, they have to go to what's called, some people say, the bucket shops, essentially.
Yeah,
it's a you know, company, brokers, where you know full well they're not loyal shareholders. All they're there for is discounted shares that they'll flip straight away, sell into the market straight away, so they'll start selling, you know, and it'd be downward pressure. So they'll, you know, so yeah, so it depends. You know,
but
you know,
someone like Andalas could do with a big institutional investor coming along and lumping a big chunk down, could they? And that would help stabilize everything, and people would have a bit of faith then. And
yeah, well, that's why, you know, to a certain extent, that's why they've brought this guy on, you know, who's ex, what's his name, appointment of non-executive.
Paul Warwick.
Not Paul Warwick, no. They appointed Dr. Robert Arno. And, you know, he worked at both Morgan Stanley, Dean Witter, and Goldman Sachs, which are two of the most renowned banks in the world. So this is a guy well-connected. And so, I mean, obviously, what it says to me is this, right? They paid, you know, not only financially, a lot of shareholders paid financially, but they paid, you know, and last time they did that, you know, hugely discounted placing, they paid there, and they lost a lot of faith of shareholders, and a lot of people got made angry. It's almost a complete flip of the enthusiasm that people did have was flipped overnight into disdain, you know? And what they've done here, I think, they've learned from this. They say, listen, we don't want this ever happening again. You know, we do not want to have to raise money at this discounted rate. They were really exposed in that area. It showed they were exposed in that area. So what they've got here is a guy in. They've gone along and got a guy in who's, you know, really well-connected, who knows this area inside out, has worked in this part of the business, you know, all his life, and say, right, this is not going to happen again. So this Dr. Arno's coming in, and hopefully that will sort out that part of the business, you know? I mean, it's plugging a gap in the business they had. Obviously, he'll probably come at a you know, an expensive price, but you pay for quality, and that will pay over the longer term, you know. And like I said, I assume he's still got connections in big institutions, or, you know, but he knows how the system works, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, Dave Whitby knows how it works, you know, how the system works in Indonesia. He does know how the capital markets work in London, you know. It's a completely different area, and so they're getting someone to fill that role, essentially. You know,
So I
don't think. Listen, I don't think they'll raise money down here, and I think they'll release a lot of good news first before they even attempt to raise any money. And hopefully, like you said, with Dr. What's his name, Dr. Kev? It's not Dr. Kev, is it?
That'll do.
Doctor.
Is it Robert, isn't it?
Doctor Robert. Yes, yeah, Dr. Robert, with Dr. Bob in tow. I think
Bobby.
Yeah, Dr. Bobby. It's Dr. Bobby. So certain names don't go together today. Dr. Bobby. Hey, is this Dr. Bobby?
Trust the doctor.
No. Hello, I'm Dr. Bobby. I know. Pull your trousers down.
Right.
Yeah, pull your trousers down then. I'm Dr. Bobby. No, you're all right, Bobby. That's it. Right, I come in for a sore throat. Yes, take your trousers down. I always insist on that. I'm Dr. Bobby. Haven't you heard of me? Yes, I have.
Open wide.
Yeah. That's not your mouth, though. Open wide. What was I going to say now? So anyway, listen, moving on. I'm writing a blog. I genuinely do enjoy doing some research on stocks, right? And I'm doing research on stock this weekend that I like. To me, though, it's got the assets. You know, my acronym, I like to look at cash. You know, C is for what, Steve? C in cash is for what, Steve?
Cash.
Yeah.
That's it, Steve. It's the hardest one, that one, isn't it? Hey!
Yeah.
A is for what?
Come on, Steve.
Assets.
Yeah. Assets, yay, all right. S is for what, Steve?
What's the boss? That's the H, isn't it? Hedge Honcho.
Hedge Honcho. Are you the Hedge Honcho?
Are you the Hedgehog? S is for...
No, come on, Steve. Essentially, what do we talk about every weekend on the podcast?
Shares.
Yeah. Shares, yes, that's the share part of it. So look at the share price on a chart. Look at the shareholder register. Do the CEOs have a skin in the game? That thing. And H is for like hedge honchos, the management, you know? Now, this company I'm looking at, I don't think that particularly the management have proven themselves. They've got a bit of a name, but the assets are really exciting. You know, they've got cash. And the shareholder register is quite impressive, but again, the management haven't got as big enough skin in the game as possible. But nevertheless, this stock has been beaten down so much, and they have cash now to develop their assets. And it's an oil and gas sector play. And when you start researching, you have to learn about things, more and more things, and more and more things. And it's good. It's just a self-learning, a self-learning curve, really. And so what we're talking about today, which is very handy in the oil and gas sector, is about reserves and resources. I heard the class go, "Oh, sir." So they'd be in school. "Oh, sir, can we play games?" "No, we're talking about reserves and resources." Now sit down.
Loads of people turn off.
Yeah. So essentially, I'm going to send you, it's quite an easy thing. I'm going to send you a little chart, a little sort of figure. And it's essentially, well, I don't know if you've ever seen companies that oil companies, when they say they've got, resources or reserves or uncoverable or recoverable or a 3C or 2C or 1C, you know. Have you ever seen this, Steve? When you're piling through these RNSs that you read nonstop, do you get stuck on these terms?
Yeah. All the time. I'm always trying to look them up, and just sometimes I just haven't got enough time to look them up, so I just don't read them.
Right. Well, I'm going to help you out then, Steve, all right?
Thanks.
So essentially, what you have, first and foremost, in this little box here, is you'll have something like total petroleum in place, initially in place. It's PIIP, right? So that's everything they think could be there, whatever. Now, this is broken down again into further bits. So first and foremost, when they start to report figures that come into two areas, what do you think Stephen Martin is? What do you think resources are, Steve? If a company says they have a resource or a reserve, what is best to have, a resource or a reserve?
I would say resource.
Would you? Why would you say that, Stephen?
Because it's ongoing, whereas a reserve is just reserved. It'll run out.
That's reserved. This is a resource. So essentially, you get broken. When it comes into sort of, it becomes into what we call commercial, sub-commercial, you know? And resources is the entire bit, pretty much, that they've discovered, they've mapped out, pretty much, and they've done some tests. They've done exploration well and an appraisal well. So they explore first to see what's there, if it's there, you know, and then they do an appraisal to see how much is there, and then they get into what's called, resources. That's the resources there. And these are broken down into three sections. Now, reserves are the best you can get, because that's exactly what's proven, basically, proven or probable or possible, right? But, so it goes from, essentially, unrecoverable to contingent resources, which means that's potentially commercially recoverable, into reserves, and that's the best bit there, where they are commercial and they can actually put some figures on it. But what you first of all get is what they get is contingent resources. Now, resources, like, so imagine a cake there, three layers. At the top there, you've got unrecoverable. Second layer down in the cake, big chunk there, is resources. That's quite good. That's sub-commercial. And then right at the bottom there, that's the cream at the bottom, or the nice bits at the bottom there, is reserves. That is commercial, all right?
That's the other way up, surely. The cream's at the top.
Maybe. Depends on where you like the cake. Could be up
what
to
sort of cake do you have in your house?
Oh, okay, fair enough. All right, the rubbish is at the bottom. In the middle is quite decent. Yeah. Right at the top is really nice then, okay?
That's it.
So then, imagine that cake now. You chop it in thirds, right? One, two, three, say? And so, in the middle bit, so the bottom is rubbish. Get rid of that. You don't want that. The bottom bit.
Soggy bottom.
Yeah, the soggy bottom's gone. It's ruined. So in the middle there, what you've got there are your resources. Sub-commercial. Not actually commercial, but sub-commercial. They are broken into three. They're called in 1C, 2C, and 3C.
I love my onesie.
I like your onesie as well.
Okay.
So essentially, what a 3C is, right, it denotes the high estimate scenario of the resources. So that's a, you know, if you do really well on that, you know, if you think you've discovered everything, that's the best estimate, you know, or the highest, you know, it's not an average, it's a bit too, being a bit too optimistic, really. Then you've got the 3C, all right? So you get 2C, that denotes, you know, the best case scenario. You know, that's, so basically, that's pretty much accurate. And then 1C then is below that, is the lowest case. So it's almost like you have a good day, an average day, and a bad day, you know, on drilling. Mm-hmm. So that's what they say. So then, essentially, to prove those up, you want to prove them up into reserves then, all right? And that's when they get the, not Cs, but Ps. They go from 1C, 2C, 3C to Ps, all right? So so essentially, 3P is possible, and this is why they say this. 3P is possible, right? And I've done this backwards, really. 2P is probable, 1P is proven. So 1P is the best, proven. They say it's 2P because it's proven plus probable. See, there's 2Ps there, yeah? And the third P is proved, probable, and possible. So that's, when they quote the 3P figure, it's got, you know, 2P and 1P included as well. So that's 3Ps. You see what
I'm
saying?
So 3P is the best.
Well, no, that's all of it. That's all of it. But 1P is the best. That's the most accurate because it's proven, you know? So 1P is proven. You'll pretty much get that out of the ground. So when you go from contingent to reserves, there's what's called recovery efficiency. You're not going to recover everything in the contingent. The contingent numbers are always big, and then they go down into the reserves, you know? Because I think, on average, I think anything, the recovery efficiency goes from a 5% up to about 70%. So let's say you have 2C resources, which is the best estimate, right? The most you're going to get from that, pretty much, about 70% recoverable, you know? The worst case scenario of that, to bring it to reserves, I mean, is about 5-10%, you know? So when you're looking at results, you know, it's a lot easier to look at it in pictorial form. As I'm discussing this, I'm realizing it's very complicated. I thought it'd be easier. But essentially,
I've got it. I've got a picture of a cake in my mind.
Yeah, so yeah, the cake. So the top bit, like, is chop that into three there, 1P, 2P, 3P. And directly below that, you know, in those slices, the layer below is obviously 1C, 2C, 3C.
And is this applicable to all cakes? No, to all sectors?
Yes. So almost like the Cs, for example, if you got 1P, for example, it's the same as almost 90%. So proven resources, 90% chance, it's often called P90. 1P is called P90 as well. That means there's a 90% chance, normally, of confidence, you get that out, you know? So that's how commercial it is.
And then whether it's oil, gas, copper, gold, whatever.
No, this is pretty much oil. This is gas as well. They use gas as well, oil and gas, pretty much. Oil and gas.
Oil and gas, you know? Right. Okay.
So they use 1P, 2P, 3P, and 1C, 2C. And so when you get still on the P now, the best part of the cake, top part of the cake. So probable reserves. So you've got proven, probable, possible. Proven's best. Probable second is 2P. That's also known as the P50. Like 1P is P90, 90% chance of getting that out. Probable reserves, P50, you're going down now, so 50% chance, confidence level, right, pretty much, of recovery. And then you get to the possible reserves, and that's only a 10% chance of getting all that out. So that's you know, proven, probable, and possible, you know?
Right.
So it's
right.
A very, essentially, oil and gas is about gambling, you know? They go in there, they do an exploration route, and they do seismic data and all that. They try and skew the chances of them getting a good result as much as they can by getting as much data before actually getting in there and doing the expensive bit of drilling. Because even when they drill and they think they've got all the data, something could be wrong, you know, and it may go wrong, you may have missed a hole, or maybe too much water. So there's a lot of, you know, so when you say, for example, when Aited Energy started off, they had a 25% chance of success rate. I mean, you know, that's, you know, it doesn't sound very good, but that's what they work off. And the more data they can gather by sort of appraisal wells and all that, the better they can almost, you know, de-risk that asset. That's what they call it, you know. De-risking it means it's more chances. The more data you get, there's more chances there's something commercial you can get out of there that'll be commercial. So that's, and talking about that, right? I mean, Upland Resources, The asset they got at Hardstoff was a 25% share of, right? There's 80% chance that that's recoverable, the prospective resources, and 64% chance contingent resources. So, I mean, that's amazing. You know, that's a, you know, the chances are you know, 80% chance. Out of 10 times you drilled it, 8 times, you know, you're gonna be spot on. So that's why, you know, Steve likes that kind of risk-reward. Dr. Steve, not Steve in the podcast, likes that kind of risk-reward. And what he's going to do, he said, is get two assets like that. They're very safe to get cash in. And then he's going to go for, like, the bigger, you know, resources kind of things with less chance.
And then the only other question on something like that, so it's good that it seems, you know, very possible. The only other question is then the cost of getting it out of the ground and making it commercially viable. Is that the other then thing you've got to look at? Because if it's a really expensive process to get it out, you're not actually going to make a huge amount of money potentially. Is that
I mean, obviously they'll figure all that into the economics and stuff. But also what a company will do, for example, is they'll do a farm out. So they'll say to a big company, "Oh, listen, fella, we've got the rights here to 3 billion barrels of oil down there, you know?
Yeah.
It's going to cost us like 30, you know, 50 million to get it out. But it's going to make us a couple of billion, you know? So do you fancy, you know, covering the cost of the drill and then we'll go spits or whatever, you know? That's the way it is. Cause obviously, when you get a bigger oil fields, then they'll try and get bigger companies in because they've got, you know, proprietary technology and all this kind of stuff that they can use, and they got more experience and more people and more technicians that obviously would be better at drilling that. So But for something hard stuff, which you know, Upland are drilling, that was the first well ever drilled onshore in the UK. So first and foremost, there's proven oil there, and even recently, it's been, you know, oil pumped out without any need to stimulate it whatsoever. So there's definitely oil there. It's definitely commercial because BP did it, you know, years ago when there's little technology. But Steve now with new technology believes there's oil down there that they didn't get and they abandoned because essentially at the time they couldn't access that oil with the technology, and so they know there's not commercial oil down there. It's just finding, you know, the sweet spots essentially. So all right. That was quite complicated. Steve, did you take away anything from that?
Three P's.
Yeah, well, three P's are the best, and the three C's. So, go on, Steve, tell me what you learned from that. Regurgitate, please.
Well, I didn't learn anything from it, really. I just...
You didn't learn anything from it?
No, not really.
What is the point in us doing this?
I love Steve. I love his honesty. It's good.
Time you mentioned Steve, but obviously it wasn't me, is it?
Are you sitting there, literally, birdies going around in your brain, and all of a sudden you hear the word Steve. You know, "Oh, Steve!" And I say, "Not Steve in the podcast," and he switches back off. Oh, not me.
Well, I'm not sure what to take with that knowledge, really.
Well, Justin, how do we use that knowledge? That is a good question. Like, how do you use that knowledge? When reading company reports, basically, you can understand them, where they are with their resources.
Well, because, I'll give you an example. Let's have a look at it. So if you go to a company presentation, right, and they say we got, 60 billion barrels of oil, you know, and then they're not 3C or something ridiculous, you know, it gives you, it makes you look, well how far along are they making this commercial? Because they always quote different figures, you know. And so, if you look at, for example, Talao Energy, huge 3C resource. So that's, if you look at, you know, the cake for the 3C is the high estimate, you know, of contingent resources. 3.3 TCF, trillion cubic feet. That's a lot, you know, it's a massive amount. And then you've got to how much they've had certified now as commercial, and that's, you know, 1P, 2P and 3P. It's a tiny little fraction of that. But as Tony said, getting the certified resources, you know, the proven resources and probable and possible is the hard bit, the initial commercialization to show it's commercial is hard.
Yeah.
And then with more work, you know, because you're not going to go in all guns blazing with all the thousands of drills, millions of drills, trying to get it all commercial in one go, because if it isn't, you've blown a lot of money. So what you do is edge in, you know, almost, you know, do some, you know, exploration, then appraisal, and then you start drilling and working it and seeing how much then you just get a steady gas flow that is commercial. They said, right, it's commercial. All we need to do then, now is prove this up.
Yes, they then declare it 3P or 2P.
Yes, they get into the P section then. It goes from C's to P's. That's when it's commercial. That's when you know, investors... bigger investors get involved, you know, and they start getting interested, because then you know you can get it out there and you know you can make money getting it out there and it's commercial. At the C level, it's what's called sub-commercial. It's on the way there, but you have to do further work. So it's just, I think it's just handy knowing that, you know?
I think it is, yes.
If a company has several different assets, they're all at different stages of appraisal, exploration, or production, then it's handy to know that they're getting cash flow from one, the other one's, you know, the contingent resource stage, they're not reserves yet. So, and that obviously, resources, reserves. So reserves are the commercial, resources aren't, you know? They're essentially what they think is there, and they sort of proved it, you know, but not to a certain extent where it's commercial. So just, even if you read something and they say resources, not reserves. Reserves, obviously commercial, resources are not. Resources are C's and reserves are P's. Yeah? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'll give you an example, Coppel. And, you know, it's like, you have a look at them and they got, what was on their website there? Canadian Overseas Procurement. By the way, you know, and the reason why I'm looking at this company on the weekend, the blog, is because I've noticed, you know, the performance of a share price of a company when they get closer to the action bit, the drill bit, you know, the spudding, what's called spudding. There you are, Steve's another term for you. When they start to drill, spudding, that's what they call it, right? Mm. When they get close to spudding, that's when the share price starts to move. And look at Prospect Oil and Gas, look at Canadian Overseas Petroleum, who are both doing that, you know, this quarter. And you see the share prices is rampant. And this company I'm talking about, it's in the blog post this weekend. You can sign up the newsletter, by the way, Steve, and please read it. Essentially, it's not until next June they'll be doing this. So there's plenty of time to get in. The share price is an all-time low. They've got cash to drill this on their own. It's a big asset. But they ideally would farm someone, have a farm out here, to some other bigger company as well. But I was thinking, you know, get in now and don't get in too big and you can accumulate a little bit. But when spud time comes, that's when you reap the rewards, you know? It'll be several times bigger, hopefully, than it is now. And they've got other assets as well where they're looking for farming partners. But, I mean, that's what I think is, you know, it's knowing time frames, isn't it, you know? And so it's just looking at that. What was I talking about then? Canadian Overseas Petroleum. Hang on. Yeah. So, in fact, I tweeted this out recently, actually, the estimates here. Operation investors, presentations, Coppel. Let me just click that, open that, and so I'll scroll down. And like they're in Liberia, and their partner there is, they've farmed out ExxonMobil, obviously one of the biggest companies in the world, and because it's a high impact, you know, massive resource there, and so they will take. So let me scroll down here. All right, so they've got prospective recoverable resources. All right, so they've got P90, P50, P10, and they've got gross and net to Coppel, so that's what they do. So the P90 figure is 305 million barrels of oil. So that's a 90% confidence level in getting that. That's P, you know, it's a P level. So they are, you know, P50 is 449, so increases, but there's only obviously 50% confidence level of that happening. And P10, so 10% chance, 720. So you do the math there, you know. 350 million barrels. You know, if they get $10 profit off each barrel, even, you know, like the beer mat mass, back of the envelope mass, if they get $10 off that, you know, that is, you know, what was that, 3 billion? Yeah? No. 305 million. Yeah, 3,000. 3,050 million, yeah. So that's 3 billion profit.
Yeah, 3 billion, yes.
3 billion, 90% chance, if they make $10 profit, a 90% chance of them earning 3 billion. Wow. Now, they are, you know, market cap of about 65 million. You can see why it's rampant at the moment, share price, because they're now drilling there in their thing. So you can see the upside, yeah? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
So it's worth looking at. I mean, I did tweet that out from SharePickers, actually, but that little graphic you see. Now, to ExxonMobil, I mean, they net to them, gross is like. P90 gross is 1,797 million barrels. So you can see how big that oil field is. And that's why the big guys only get involved in these big areas because, you know, they need a lot of oil to move the needle as for their earnings as far as that's concerned. But anyway, yes. Have we talked enough? I think we have, haven't we?
Yeah.
You have, yeah.
Yeah. I did
it's
talk
time for
today.
Steve now.
Steve, what are you doing? What's happened this week? Anything life changing in your life?
No, I'm working this weekend again.
Yeah, rad boy. Doing it? You doing overnight filming?
No filming this week. No.
What are you
doing?
Gay
strip bar.
Where are you going? What are you doing, Steve?
I'm up in the old London this weekend doing a fireworks show.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm doing the fireworks.
Yeah, you set them off and stuff. Just lighting them up. All right, boys, you should give an explanation as to what they are. Okay, this is a Roman candle, and you'll see initially some white light and blue and then yellow, then explosion at the end. All right? Have some sparklers. Do you know what? It's funny how times change. I used to like bangers as a kid. Now I eat them. Do you?
Yes.
And sparklers are boring. Now I quite like sparklers. Yeah. Anyway, I've got to go because I'm going out and do
this. Yeah.
Thanks very much. And there'll be a test next week on the stuff we talked about today. All right.
Yes, sir.
All right. Yeah. Bye bye then.
Okay. Bye bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.